You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, and welcome into this edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. It's sort of a crossover episode, although this one will just be going on Locked On Pacers. They play the Suns tonight in Phoenix. Normally, the Suns are not a particularly challenging opponent, although this year the Suns are capable and good and have good players and are worth talking about. So with me, the host of Locked On Suns, and he writes for Forbes as well, and Bright Side of the Sun, the SB Nation site for the Suns, and many other places, including about women's basketball, which is fantastic, Brendan Kleen. Brendan, how you doing, man?
Doing really well. I appreciate, I guess, as somebody who had to watch the years when the Suns were not worth talking about, that others deem them worth talking about now. As somebody who talks about them ad nauseum, it's a thrill.
Yeah, not that we glossed over them in years past, that would be unfair, but we never gave them as long of segments as other teams. We actually had to like stop this time.
It's fair.
Talk about, you know, they have like 10 good players and a good coach and they look fun. And one of those good players is Devin Booker, but I'm not going to start with him because you literally 15 minutes before we started this posted an article about Aaron Baines. And I want to talk about Aaron Baines first because one, he's playing really freaking good this year per your article and per the stats and per the film. And two, he's playing good enough that they have decided to start him over DeAndre Ayton, which some of that's because he just came back from injury, but still. So what is Baines doing so well and why have they decided to go with him over Ayton in the starting five?
Yeah. So, you know, Baines is out right now with an injury. It's kind of too soon to tell if he'll play against Indiana. I think he'll probably be a game time decision. And I think that's going to have a big impact on the game and on the Suns season. He's been a guy who's dealt with injuries all year. So, you know, Ayton has been ultimately now back in the starting five, partially because Baines got hurt. But even before that, they were starting together. Then Ayton did start and then Baines kind of fell out of things with the injury. So I think really what you're looking at with him is probably a return to the role in which he's best and in the one we've seen him make an impact in for years now, whether it was with Detroit or Boston or the beginning of the year with the Suns. So he's just steady, man. I think he's made a little bit of a stride as a shooter, not quite as hot as he was early in the season, but getting more comfortable, took a lot of them in the FIBA tournament. And, you know, just it's, to me, it illustrates the point that we all make with young teams every year, but don't always get to actually see it in action, which is you put smart players who communicate, know the NBA, know basketball, and have an actual desire to help the younger players, and good things are going to happen. And that's been the kind of core thing for this season as a whole for the Suns. But I think Baines is maybe the biggest kind of the biggest indicator of that.
Yeah, he has always kind of been the high IQ center, battles on the boards, takes smart shots. He's slow, but he is always in the right spots on D. I was selfishly hoping that. So, how many games did him and Ayton start together? Like 5 to 10, I think. I was selfishly
maybe around five.
I was hoping we'd see that just for the cross matchups with Turner and Sabonis. I thought that would have been really fun.
Yeah, it would have been like a 1985 type of basketball game.
Yeah, the Pacers do get that on occasion. Like teams are like, oh, cool, they're starting two centers. We can get away with these two center lineups, and they can't, and it's very fun. I was hoping to see Baines play for the fan club, and he's playing well. And just seeing him against the Pacers would be fun. But okay, now to the big enchilada guy that I have no idea how the Pacers are going to stop, because I'm pretty sure right now the answer is no one can stop him. Booker's last, whatever, 15, 10, 20 game stats are just ridiculous. We talked earlier on the show, we preview every game at the beginning of the week about the Suns, and you look at Booker's stats, they're amazing. And the first thing that jumped out to me is he's hitting 57% from two-point range. You know, he's getting to the rim, he's scoring, he's hitting the threes. How amazing has he been this season?
I mean, all year he's been great, but I think the past, basically since the calendar flipped over, he had a nice road, the team as a whole had a nice road trip just at the end of December into the new year. And since then, he scored 30 or more in seven straight games at one point. I think it actually might've been eight straight games. And maybe dipped below that a couple times, and then it has been right back to it over the past couple, coming off of an, I think, 39-point game against the Spurs on Monday before the Suns ultimately didn't win that game. But he's just, I mean, to me, he's putting it all together in a way that is just kind of fascinating. You watch guys add skill over the course of their career, and I've had the privilege to watch this guy just build up his game. And, you know, it's not often that it is so incremental the way that he's done it. He was not a great finisher early on. He's a good finisher now. He's just gotten so crafty and such an incredible shot maker. Didn't always get to the line early on. He's getting to the line whenever he wants to. He's kind of a little bit of a junkyard dog in that way. I think he'd be a pretty miserable guy to play against, to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, for a guy who came into the league known as a sniper from three and little else, he's almost not even relying on that part of his game at all right now. And that's just wild to think about, that everything else has gotten so good that he doesn't even need that three-point shot to put together the kind of productivity he's had so far.
Yeah, seventh in the league in free throws made, and some of that's health, obviously. But just, yeah, getting to the line, being that three-level scorer is just such a big step for young guys, especially a 23-year-old. And if you know, if he can get to the rim and finish at the basket and get to the line, and we all know he can pull up from wherever, I'm assuming Jeremy Lamb's going to be guarding him. What can defenders do? What is Lamb's best shot here? I mean, is it just pray, basically? Because it seems like that's kind of all teams have been doing so far.
Yeah, I would say, you know, what teams have always had success against Booker doing, and part of this is no by no fault of his own, although he does turn the ball over a little more than you'd like even still. It's always just been a team thing. You know, if you send extra defenders at him, especially above the three-point line, they just still, at this point, don't have enough reliable creators on this team to make teams pay for it. It's gotten a little better with DeAndre Ayton back from his suspension and Kelly Oubre playing a little better this season, and just, you know, guys like Baines, Rubio, and Šarić, who are those veterans I referenced before. Like, it's slightly better now, but that's still going to be the best way to do it. You know, that's how teams defend James Harden. That's how teams have always defended great players. So I would imagine that's probably what Indiana does, knowing how solid they are as a team defense. But yeah, I mean, you get him in, he's going to get Lamb. He's going to get guys in isolation situations and transition situations, and he's going to get what he wants. It's just a matter of how much he does and if it ultimately contributes to a win.
Do I make a double team joke here? Is that the next logic?
Yeah, exactly. people will get to see if they haven't watched Booker since then, the silliness of that controversy will become pretty evident. This guy has no issue with that at all.
Yeah, six and a half assists a game. He's clearly shown some way of breaking him down. Ooh, and I used assists as an intentional segue to a guy the Pacers were rumored to for basically an entire month this summer. In fact, the only guy the Pacers were rumored to this summer, and they didn't end up with him. But I have a personal theory about NBA teams, and that is that good ball-handling player, point guard play specifically, is the most important thing from taking a crappy team to a competent team in the next level, etc. The Suns going from terrible point guard play for 3 years to Ricky Rubio, how much of a factor is that in their evolution from terrible to good?
What I've kind of said this year, talking about the team big picture, is their offense obviously is predicated upon Booker making shots, getting to his spots, you know, doing his thing that we just talked about. But the identity of this team offensively is there because of Ricky Rubio. You know, they've jumped up in pace this season, despite Monty Williams bringing a reputation for playing slowly to the Suns when he was hired. And, you know, typically the Suns haven't necessarily been very effective in transition. They have been great there because of Rubio and, you know, the ball movement and all the types of things that have kind of represented this team when they've been at their best. They've gotten away from it at times, but all of that comes from Rubio. I think he's by far the leader of this team and just somebody that, you know, like you said, it's so evident to watch from last year to this year, the impact he's had, but it's just also impressive that they've come together around his style so much when, you know, this is a Booker and Ayton team in the long term.
Yeah. It was kind of weird. Weird's the wrong word. It was interesting this summer, like like everybody knew what the Pacers needed at the one, and it was not Ricky Rubio. So seeing all that.
Same with the Suns, to be honest.
Touche. Most of the Pacers conglomerate, I guess we'll call that, using that word, was not for that signing. You know, it's like, oh, this dude's not going to fit and blah, blah, blah. And what got lost in that is that Ricky Rubio is still good. You know, he's not a bad player. He doesn't, like, you look at his percentages and his defense is good, but not great. It's like, why is this the guy you want? And then you watch him play and you're like, oh, I get it. And he's kind of a hard player to explain.
He is. I mean, I think I've always, since they were kind of thinking about getting him in, even before this summer, because, you know, the prior coach of the Suns is Igor Kokoschkov, who developed the offense that Rubio played in Utah, and, you know, had a little bit of a relationship with him. We had been talking about Rubio in Phoenix for a while, and it honestly felt like that ship had sailed when Kokoschkov was fired in May. And so then to get him, it was just as much of a surprise to Suns fans and people like me who cover the team that he was ultimately their choice. They wanted Terry Rozier, who, similar to what you were saying, ooh, with the Pacers ending up, ooh, with Brogdon. Yeah, not ideal either, but to the point like that you were making with the Pacers ultimately getting Brogdon, who's a completely different player than Rubio, so is Terry Rozier. And so to pivot from Rozier to Rubio is, it kind of tells me that they just wanted anything at that spot, you know? Yeah. And like to your point, it was such a need that I think they just did it in whatever way they could. And 3-year deal for Rubio, not too bad. And he's been incredible. He's slowed down a little bit as a scorer since a hot start. But yeah, I mean, I think he's been maybe the second most valuable player on this team over the course of the full season behind Booker.
I might title this podcast "The Two Teams That Didn't End Up with Terry Rozier."
Yeah, and then like some sort of sighing emoji, or like the one with the tear coming off of the smiling face, as if we avoided the crisis there. Yeah.
Oh man, what a bad player. Okay. I've highlighted three guys that I really wanted to talk about. I want to talk about Ayton later, but I want to pivot a little here because this is one specific matchup we're talking about. What matchups are the Pacers going to be able to easily exploit against the Suns?
I think if the Pacers score at all in this game, no matter where it comes from, they're going to have a good shot at beating the Suns. And I think, you know, the Suns defense overall, it hasn't even been necessarily one type of guy that's beaten them consistently. You know, it's truly been a team just kind of breakdown, and they've really changed how they've played defensively since the beginning of the season. If anyone caught a Suns game early, it was written about a lot. They were sending super aggressive help early in a possession toward the, you know, pick and roll or whatever action was happening. They'd have a guy right at the free throw line just to get in the way of the opposing ball handler. And they were just, it was working. And then I think teams adjusted to it and it really started to not work. And they haven't been able to find a backup plan there. They've been switching more since Ayton came back into the lineup. But you know, I think if the Pacers can get consistent penetration, whether that's Brogdon or Lamb, or coincidentally, I think TJ Warren's a guy who could have.
Oh, you said it. I didn't think you'd say his name.
I've moved on. but that is one type of player that I would say the Suns have struggled against, because their wings aren't big like that. You know, they have,
right,
Oubre, Mikal Bridges. Both of those guys are athletic and long, but not very strong. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways you can beat the Suns, but maybe Warren's a guy to look at here.
Well, in my brain originally, I'd actually thought about the size of the perimeter players on the Suns, because when Brogdon is healthy, the Pacers just slam pick and rolls. I'm talking like 4 dribble handoffs of possession. If that's not there, pick and roll like every time. Mm-hmm. So I expect Sabonis to just be collaborating some of these Suns guards, trying to free up lanes, but it, you know, ipso facto, if they are sending weak side help aggressively or not aggressively, someone's going to be open if they stop those drives. And that,
for sure, that's
where their secondary guys are so good. Lamb and Warren have been so good is in those situations. So they might have openings if they can use the small stature of the Suns guards to their advantage. But it seems like the Suns defense is getting better, right? I mean, they have a lot of young guys who are learning together. So you never know.
Yeah, I would, you know, you know, like we talked about Baines, and I'm fascinated to even just see what their defense looks like against a team like Indiana. You know, we joked early, but you know, you know from covering this team, like it is a unique matchup on any given night. They've been starting Dario Saric again, who was the odd man out when Ayton was at the four for a moment. So he'll, you know, bring some size in the starting lineup. But this is the growing pain part of the year for the Suns for sure. So, you know, whether they do try to switch more and just contain the ball handlers that way to avoid that. But just as an example, like Derek White went for, I think, you know, over 20 points and like 7 assists on Monday against the Suns.
Wow.
And he's by no means, you know, the type of player you'd expect to have that type of night. So
that is Team USA guard Derek White.
Sorry, my bad. Yeah. are we bringing the Team USA joke too on Booker? Is that, are we?
Oh, did he not? Wait, was he not on Team USA? No, that was a reference to him, to White being on Team USA when he totally shouldn't have been.
Okay, well, Bill Simmons did the whole thing with Booker.
Wait, Devin Booker wasn't on Team USA?
No.
Did he pull out himself?
Yeah, he did. He was one of the guys who stepped aside, and it was kind of a joke because he's not really that type of superstar to voluntarily take himself out of the running. But, no. You know.
If Bill Simmons started it, I don't listen to Bill Simmons, so that would be
well, that would explain it.
Okay, flip side of the question I just asked you. If the Suns win or dominate or whatever, what matchup are they picking on this game that leads them to win? Non-Booker division.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, well, that's almost kind of built in here because Booker's been scoring like crazy and it hasn't mattered a lot of the nights. So I would say, you know, it to me, DeAndre Ayton needs to play incredibly well. I just don't know if this is the type of game for it to happen. Like, you know, so let's say Baines is healthy. I think if Baines is healthy, they have put Ayton there as kind of a fulcrum of the second unit at times. So maybe that gives the Suns an advantage. I mean, how much are Turner and Sabonis being staggered?
They play about 18 minutes together. They'll start the first and third quarter together for sure. They'll probably close the half, and depending on how the game has gone, close the game.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, that's maybe something is if Ayton can punish them, maybe get one of those guys or both of them into foul trouble, that type of thing. But I don't see like an obvious, I think these types of teams similar to San Antonio, that, you know, Spurs defense hasn't been great, but they're gonna at least execute and be disciplined. And that's a team the Suns for years have had no chance against because they are the opposite of that and they're so young. So I think it's gonna be a game where if the Suns can just control the tempo the whole time, push the pace, all that type of stuff, you could see it. If it's just like a 120 point game for the Suns, you know, that's maybe not the Pacers type of ball game. They just lost a similar one to the Jazz. But I don't see if the game goes how we would all think it would be, I think the Pacers kind of blow them out, to be honest with you, even though it is a road game for them.
I usually close with who do you think's gonna win, but wow, okay. I do think the Pacers match up pretty well with the Suns, to be fair.
Position by position,
I mean, Booker's going to kill Jeremy Lamb. Like, Jeremy Lamb's actually been a worse defender than I expected, which is kind of impressive. But outside of him, I mean, everyone has just been solid enough on D and can clearly do something positively. So outside of Booker, I don't see a way the Suns score a ton of points.
Hey, guys, I want to take an opportunity here on this break to talk to you about the lovely people over at Calm. Calm is an app that will help you sleep and meditate. And they've teamed up with none other than Lakers star LeBron James to help people train their mind. LeBron and Calm both know that like any other muscle in your body, your mind is a muscle. And Calm is designed to help your brain, your muscles relax and sleep better, be less stressed, and perform at your peak physical condition. LeBron says, getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind. And he is the best basketball player in the world. So obviously what he is doing is working, and it could work for you too. If you go to calm.com/lockedonNBA, you can get 40% off a premium membership with Calm. That's calm.com/lockedonNBA. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount. Just go to calm.com/lockedonNBA. Folks, the Super Bowl is set. We get to see Patrick Mahomes against the mighty 49ers who knocked out my Vikings. And of course, you know where the best place is? to bet on the Super Bowl. I talk about them a million times because I'm going to keep telling you the best place to bet on things is MyBookie, of course. Between the Super Bowl, the NBA in full swing, All-Star Game coming up, March Madness is only a month and a half away. It is time. It is really the best time to get into betting. I think spring and winter and early winter part of the year is the best time for it. Just hit up MyBookie.ag, enter that promo code LockedOnNBA. I'm going to say it every time, to get their offer, which they're offering our listeners. They'll match up to half of, or excuse me, they'll match half of your deposit up to $2,000. So if you put in $2,000, you'll have $3,000 on there with an extra $1,000 of free money to play with. That's mybookie.ag, promo code LockedOnNBA at checkout to activate that offer. That's LockedOnNBA at mybookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid.
You and I are on the same page. And like I said, it's like if Booker scores 40, that hasn't necessarily meant the Suns win this year or through his entire career, unfortunately.
I also have a conspiracy theory Suns question.
Okay.
Can you believe that? I didn't think I'd have one on here. All right. Hypothetically, DeAndre Ayton went to not Arizona University. Is he the first pick two drafts ago?
I would say no, but so it's so much.
Not that he isn't really good. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I think I can say for pretty much certain that he was number one on the front office's big board, not just the owner's big board.
Okay.
And Marvin Bagley also, he went to high school in Phoenix.
Oh, wow. You know? I did not
and
know that.
So that's a little bit strange too. And I know they really liked him. He was higher on their board than I think most people would have, you know, people that analyze the draft had him as well. You're not gonna get a logical answer from me on why they hired the national team coach and then did not draft the national team's best player, Luka Doncic. I have no answer for you there. I know that's what we're getting to. I don't.
No, it's not even about, well, Trey's really good too, but it's not necessarily about Luka. I just always wonder, you know, sometimes the Browns or Bengals, you know, since they've been so bad at football, they'll have a top pick and there's always a good Ohio State player, right? And I always see the suggestion, oh, they're going to draft this guy, the local kid, get the whatever. And I wondered, oh, Arizona guy on the Suns.
It played a part. It did. It had to. I mean, he's right there. It's easier to scout him. The owner went to the University of Arizona. Robert Sarver went there.
I did not know that either. Wow.
That's a big part of it.
My own conspiracy theory grows.
Yeah, exactly. So anytime there's an Arizona player, it's not only that he's just a couple hours south, it's also the owner went to school and is still involved with the school. So it's unfortunate, unavoidable, but yeah, you kind of just, you try not to think about it if you're in my position.
Last question, feel free to dodge it or not answer. And I know you know where this is going, given the way I just said that. I don't want to get your thoughts on it unless you're willing to offer them, but what I know there was a cap reason that the Suns dumped Warren, but I don't know what it was. And I want to know it better, so it makes more sense to people who just think that they're dumb.
I would say, I mean, the cap reason would be connected to the fact that later they also felt like they had to dump Josh Jackson and lost DeAnthony Melton, which to me is even more valuable than the 32nd pick that they gave up.
Absolutely.
Melton's just been incredible for Memphis and looks like he's going to be a rotation player for them for years. So that's really painful. So I think both of those are connected, and they didn't have the cap space to do their business this summer. You know, they didn't have enough to sign Rubio, and they didn't, especially later in that same draft night, acquiring Baines. I think if they had that in mind already, then maybe that partially explains. They also acquired Dario Saric for a draft pick, so that added salary. Like, you know, you can kind of at least understand the thinking, if not the process, of why they did it the way that they did it. From the perspective of just Warren, I think they were ready to get him out of there. You know, I don't know what experience you've had covering him, but I think it was just, it wasn't going to work from a relationship standpoint anymore.
Yeah, it's an unfair comparison because, I mean, I don't know what happened in Phoenix. I don't want to pretend like I do. But like, this situation's just been perfect for him. So it looks terrible for them. But given what happened in 4 years, like if you were a Suns fan, you'd be like, thank God we traded TJ Warren, you know?
So, yeah. And same thing with Melton. Melton has been way better in Memphis with their with the way they play, playing next to John Morant and everything, than he would have been here. So, it's like, it feels painful, but I do think getting rid of Warren, we all knew it was coming. Did we think they'd attach a pick to get it done? No. I mean, that's a clear mistake. There's no way to slice it that isn't a mistake, but there was no way Warren was going to be playing for this team.
I wrote up an article about potential guys the Pacers could target with their first round pick, and I put Warren in it. Yeah, I mean, I included that the Suns would also send like that 32nd pick, but then I was like, wait, what? Yeah, it came out of nowhere. But my internal theory is that he's going to try to score 100 points in this basketball game. So we'll see.
I'm excited. I mean, we've been joking all year if he's going to get a tribute video. I think the collective answer is probably not, but yeah, it has been perfect. Like, he's the fact that he started shooting threes last year. I know he doesn't necessarily have to do it quite as much in Indiana as he might have elsewhere. I think that probably helps him. I think just playing with a good team defense under a good coach, like that's a luxury was not afforded to him in Phoenix. So I've been excited watching from afar how strong he's played this year.
There you go. Good. I'm glad there's no ill will. My heart. Suns trash has become a hashtag in Pacers Twitter that I will not succumb to, by the way, but okay. It's gotten that far.
Appreciate it.
Brandon, thank you for coming and talking Suns with me. I think it's going to be a fun game. I agree with you. I think the Pacers are going to win, but I do not expect it to be as lopsided as you do. So that's interesting. You write for a million places, so I will let you plug what you want to plug.
Yeah. Well, you said it at the beginning. Forbes, Bright Side of the Sun over at SB Nation. That's the best place to find my stuff. And at BrendanClean14 on Twitter if you want to get a little bit of the Sun side of things and see what TJ Warren left behind.
And of course, if you love Locked On Pacers, you would love Locked On Suns. Evan Siddery, his co-host, has been on here before to talk Warren. He also does the Colts show. I don't know if he still does, but he used to do the Colts show.
He does.
For sure. So some indie connections there. Brandon, excuse me. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll talk soon.
And we will see you guys tomorrow to recap all the action from this game.